we up there? Okay. A couple of thoughts before we get started. Don't think sending up Denny replaces me sending you my daughter. This afternoon, I worried about the timing of this summary because this afternoon we're going to go into a session of emerging technologies and the other committees where there's going to be some more interesting material presented that bears on this transition we're talking about and how we progress forward. But as I reflect on that, one thing we can think about is we'll summarize what we've heard to date, or at least what I've heard to date, and then take that in terms of questions and whatnot to these committees this afternoon and maybe get some discussion going on those. I want to thank the organizers. I think we should all thank the organizers since this is my summary. And that's all the commercials. Okay. What have I heard? As we've been talking in the halls, talking in the various meals, and listening to presentations within these sessions, there's a couple of things that I'd like to highlight relative to the thoughts we had in the opening session regarding transitioning, where are we, what's going to happen, what are some of the projections. And we are going to be talking a lot about this whole genome scan this afternoon, so I don't want to spend a lot of time on it, but I do want to reflect a little bit on Dorian's comment for those of you who missed it, or his presentation for those of you who missed it, in the genetic prediction. And that was, this is a transforming technology. It's going to transform the way we think about breeding. It's going to transform the roles that we play when we think about our industry. So we have to keep this in mind. But remember, Dorian also said, we have to keep this comment or this thought in perspective because this tool has only been available to the general research community for the last 7 or 8 months. And, you know, there's a big grant that's just been awarded to a couple of awardees that asked the question, does it work? And so this is a technology that everybody feels very good about, a tool that everybody thinks has a lot of promise, but we've got a lot of work to do relative to understanding that particular tool, implementing that particular tool, and then relying on that particular tool. We heard some other, what I think were very interesting comments, and that is relative to information channels and information sharing. And there are some very rich databases out there. In the United States, however, in our disconnected industry, I feel we've done a very poor job of getting into those databases and getting those databases to places where we can capitalize on that information in a more national scope to our program. And we have some pilot studies, and I think the one Mark mentioned relative to health is one of those pilot studies where we have an opportunity to show the worth of genetics, the worth of this new technology, to a new audience that previous to now perhaps had not really appreciated what we could do, and maybe in return we can open up some more doors relative to getting into the phenotypic data sets that they have. We talked a little bit in genetic prediction about this concept of integration of DNA information with pedigree and phenotypic information. And Dorian elaborated in his presentation, if we have two different sources of information, there's a finite number of ways we can combine them. And what I thought was rather clever in that is he stuck in the middle, regardless of which way we go, this idea that there is a real need for people with the technical know-how to do this. The R&D that's going to drive however we're going to transition through this next several years. And Ken Anderson said, you know what? We don't have a lot of these people. And some of the people we have a lot of gray hair if they're lucky, and a little gray hair if they're like me. And so we're looking at a dwindling resource. And that resource has a certain amount of time and a certain amount of energy. And we cannot afford to duplicate effort. I think that's a very strong message that we need to take home in all of our research communities and say, anytime we have the opportunity, we have to look to various ways of collaboration. And I thought Kent did a really great job this morning of explaining to us what is a good collaborative effort. What else did we hear? If we go back to this integration of information, pedigree and phenotypic information, Steve Catchman showed us a prototype, 410 animals with 14 sires, a very, very small data set, but one that can be looked at and manipulated. This was in the genetic prediction workshop, and one that has a very interesting feature about it. Even though there are 410 animals from 13 to 14 sires, this one is genotyped for the major tests for tenderness that are available to us now commercially. And if we're talking about merging that kind of information into genetic evaluation, there's a whole host of things we have to learn in terms of the methodology and then the needs within the industry to create the right resources so that we can extract the correct parameters to implement this approach. And so Steve took us through, and I have to congratulate him on not putting in a whole host of equations, those of you who are there. He avoided them beautifully. But what he did show us was some information. In this little data set, he had sires and he had progeny. And if you compute the accuracy associated with the EPD generated in this little data set, for those sires with a relatively few number of progeny but no data on the sire itself, this is tenderness, and you compute the EPD of the progeny itself with a record, those are the accuracies that he achieved under what is listed up there as the phenotypic model. In the full model, Steve looked at what if we integrated information on the DNA tests that are available. And so he did. He put all three in there. We're not going to have every animal genotyped all the time for all three. But he did integrate that information in to demonstrate that this system can handle multiple sources of information on these animals. And he got an accuracy of 0.33. Then he just told you if you got a certain amount of phenotypic information, adding DNA information, in this case on the progeny, it's not going to help a whole lot. And he got accuracy associated with the progeny, who does have the test, of 0.3. So we had a nice increase. How many of you noticed that? There's a yearling animal, and that animal has a phenotypic observation and a DNA test, and its accuracy in this little data set was exactly the same as the average accuracy of the sires that produce those progeny. This gives us an encouragement in terms of thinking about where do you need to improve accuracy the most? Animals with the least amount of information. Just what Denny told us. And here we see at least an operational example, a small prototype, that encourages us to think that integrating that information in is going to impact how we make a selection decision. Very encouraging information to me. We heard a lot of concepts of collaboration, research collaborations, collaborations around breed associations, and other industry, support industries as well. However, there are some signs of regression. We heard Kent mention a couple of cases where genetic evaluations are going to become separated. In the United States, for the last decade, and here in Canada with the breed associations that were in those genetic evaluations we were doing, that information was trickling up. Our focus has been on multi-breed evaluation. The NBCEC had as a vision one database, one entity doing genetic evaluation, one set of EPDs so that a commercial producer could look at any potential breeding stock from any breed, whether it be purebred or composite, and make a decision between those animals. We had to get out of the service of doing genetic evaluation, and it's now gone to the industry, and we're going to go through a transition in that particular effort. And we heard about various organizations that are raising to the challenge, and we need them in order to provide this genetic evaluation service. But as we tried to force and push and cudgel and whatever else you want to say these industries to come together, we're going to go through a period of time where we're separate. And so as we think about transitioning not only with DNA, let's keep in mind that the commercial producer still needs to be able to make that decision between animals that may be coming out of different genetic evaluations, and we have to continue to work towards getting that back into one system. We've heard a little bit about certain organizations asking the question, are we who we really need to be at this point in time? And BIF was right out there in the front. Now, it sort of surprised some of us that there's some thought that BIF may be getting involved in activities we never really thought of BIF getting involved in. And that may have surprised some of us. But that's what we ought to be doing in every organization within the industry. If we're going to be facing a transition, if we know we're moving from a technology of today to a technology of tomorrow, let's every organization ask the question, are we who we need to be today, and what do we want to be tomorrow? And so I applaud BIF for going through this exercise. Sort of hold my breath as to what's going to come out the other end, but I applaud you for trying. And then we saw a risk assessment, which I thought was also an excellent activity. The reason being that there's a group learning more about themselves from internal sources, external sources, asking questions of where they succeed, where they fail, and how do we position ourselves to be ready for the future. We have a lot of organizations, NCBA, NBCEC, ARS, Ag Canada, a lot of organizations that ought to be going through this exercise. But you know what? Went through them separately. Let's start thinking about bringing these organizations together in terms of saying, well, if you're going to go there, maybe we don't need to. Organization. What we heard Denny say and what we've heard a lot of people say is that now we have a tool, this large SNP panel or a variety of large SNP panels. We're going to get bigger ones. We're going to do all of these kinds of tool developments. And those tools are going to sit there and provide us with limited information if we don't get a real focus on these populations. And a lot of examples we saw, and will continue to see this afternoon in some of the sessions, are focused on getting phenotypic information well developed on particular animals. Now let's think about that for a minute. What we're saying now is let's adopt a strategy of investing in a smaller number of animals, getting a larger number of phenotypes, and applying a sophisticated tool to that group of animals. We need to be planning how we're going to continue to do this as we move forward. There are options. There are grants we can get. There's industry support we can garner. There are providers of this technology that we can partner with. They all have their pluses and minuses in terms of how we have to deal with concepts like intellectual property, which was asked about, and other sort of situations that are generated depending on the source of money. But we have to do that. We have to start considering and planning where we go. So how do we plan? Denny said there's a list of ERTs. Mark said there's a list of ERTs. We need to sit down and truly decide which of these traits are going to be ERTs for what situations. How can we do that? Well, the NBCEC at Colorado State, when Dorian was there and with Mark, had started a project we hope continues, which is a decision support tool, which simulates what happens if you make a selection decision between two bulls. And the impact of that simulation is a result of the economically relevant traits that drive that particular problem, whether it's cow-calf, retained ownership, or feedlot. We need to come to some consensus because we've got some money to invest, we've got some traits we don't have information on, We have some traits we have a lot of information on for one breed. We need to replicate that. Mark said we have some problems with traits that are going to occur in different environments, such as adaptation. So we're going to have to consider a planned replication. There are a lot of things we need to be thinking about down the road that are expensive. We need to develop the resources to do that, and obviously, we can never afford to do it twice. Okay? Direction. Small steps towards someday. And I actually, after this group of presentations that we heard to BIF at this point in time, I added a few dots to someday. I think it's going to take us a little longer to organize than I thought it might have when we started. Okay, I'm not pessimistic about this. It's just that I don't think we have all the knowledge and all the tools and all the people currently in the right place to address this quickly. So it's going to be a process. First step, I'd like to invite you all to the Genetic Prediction Workshop. It's going to be held December 8 through 18. It's going to be a little bit more technical presentations, but it's going to go through some of the same issues we've been discussing at BIF. And the timing is excellent. The timing is excellent. If we launch from where we've gotten to today in this particular meeting and carry forward, then I think we have the opportunity to start doing some more things that we need to do to keep moving forward. The BIF guidelines are being revised. And Larry, you're taking leadership in that. So if you've got any ideas of what needs in the BIF guidelines, let Larry know. But here's a great opportunity. Let's spend our efforts between now and that particular meeting and then afterwards for the year or so that Larry is involved in rewriting those to see what do we need to get in there. How can we collectively provide some direction? Because the BIF guidelines, with this revision, have an opportunity to set the stage. So let's capitalize on that opportunity. Projects. We have a large number of genomic projects that are underway. A lot of animals. Actually, I was trying to count up the number of animals that have been genotyped and are going to be genotyped over the next year or two to produce those hundreds of papers that Dorian says we're going to be exposed to relative to this technology over the next couple years. And it is quite impressive. And the investment to accomplish that is very impressive. But with that's going to come numerous challenges. And so while we're in this phase of actually generating these phenotypes, we have to be preparing in step two to make sure we know how to use them. So we're investing. The NBCEC, for example, has put two technical people into various research programs. At Iowa State, where many of the research populations that we're running this genome scan on are going to be analyzed, we put a postdoc in there and asked that person, under the leadership of Rohan Fernando and Dorian Garrick, to create some kind of pipeline analysis. If we've got a 50K SNP panel that's going to generate the information for us, let's not parcel it out to 15 people to do the analysis. Let's build a system. And there are going to be a huge number of traits going through this system to help us figure out how to train those data sets and generate the information that provides us with MBVs. I think as this system is developed, since we're supporting it at the NBCEC, we hope that it's going to be something that can become a useful tool to the research community. Integration. I really believe that our approach to getting those MBVs in as step number one to evolving our systems is a very good one. The rationale came out in Steve Katchman's talk in Genetic Prediction the other day. The rationale is we built those systems. We just have to modify them to get that information in. We can compute interim EPDs. with the MBBs included, because we know how to do that and we have a system in place. We get an accuracy that has meaning, as I showed you in previous slides. But you know what's the most important thing to me about that? Regardless of which strategy, whether we bring in MBBs or actually fit genotypes, we are capitalizing on 25 years of BIF education on the concept of EPDs. And what Steve produced was an EPD. It has a better accuracy. How simple can we get in explaining to the commercial producer? If you had a clue what EPD is, you're brilliant when it comes to molecular EPDs, because it's exactly the same. It's just more accurate. Let's not trash our infrastructure, and I like that approach quite a bit. Some discussion about databases. And I think on the phenotypic side, we are going to experience for a period of time our databases going even more disparate than we had hoped they would be at this point in time. However, we have some newness in the system out there. And let's try and capitalize on that newness and think about centralization. The first step I would like to take is any registered animal of any breed that gets genotyped, let's at least get its registration number in a particular database accessible by the web. Doesn't have to have genotypes, nothing else there, just a list of who have we genotyped for $250, $300 to do this 50K, so that when somebody else goes to genotype, they can look on there and say, well, that one's been genotyped. If you absolutely need that animal and you can't get to the genotypes because of any kind of intellectual property issues, well, genotype it. But it was an informed decision to spend that money twice, a justifiable decision. Let's not leave it to chance and waste resources. That's a small step towards a big beginning. We moved the service, the genetic evaluation, to the industry in the United States. We're trying to get that service up and running in various entities. Again, that does mean we're going to have to go through sort of a period of time as things work their way out, but we need to develop an infrastructure to support that. And that infrastructure to support it is the R&D that's based on dwindling resources. There are excellent people in both countries that work in this area. If we can build a technology center at one of the universities, and we're thinking about the University of Georgia is where to put it, because the University of Georgia has invested the research careers of many people there in software development. They now have experience transferring software to existing entities. Let's take research and put it through that center. Not NVCEC research, genetic methodology research. We have an increasing activity in terms of collaborations. I use the validation example. Validation is important, but validation is becoming a problem in terms of servicing that. So when we talk about collaboration here, the example I used the first day was collaborating between Canada and Australia and a DNA company to try and see if a panel has some value to the industry. Well, our collaborations may have to change. We may have to put more focus on the internal validations of the companies, helping them in terms of achieving various accuracies with their panels, working on ways that we don't compromise, quote, the integrity of the concept of a third-party evaluation. And we are working with the companies in order to achieve that. Long term, I like the word he uses, perturb. Dorian said in his talk that this technology has the potential to really perturb our industry. By that he means sort of shake it up. And I think that uncertainty of that kind of comment sort of perturbs or shakes up those of us who are in various aspects of this industry. But it's a true statement. This does have the potential So we have, in my opinion, two choices. We react to it when it comes, or we plan for it and make sure that every organization that exists today understands, are we who we should be today, and how do we get to who we should be tomorrow? This is not threatening. This is an opportunity. That's what I've heard so far. Of course, I have selective hearing.